Podcasting 2.0 for December 5th, 2025, episode 243, Nuts and Logs. Well, ho, 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 in advance. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Podcasting 2.0. This is the board meeting. That's where we all get together and jam. Jam, baby. We talk about everything going on in podcasting, Podcast Index, podcastindex.social, and whatever else is happening in podcasting. We are the only boardroom that does not award Christmas bonuses. I'm Adam Curry here in the heart of the Texas Hill Country and in Alabama. The man who isn't alt-left or alt-right, he's alt-enclosure. Say hello to my friend on the other end, the one, the only, the pod sage, Mr. Dave Jones.
I like it. Alt-enclosure. Clever.
Hey, man, I put production into this show. I think things. I think about things, man. I think about, like, what am I going to say? What am I going to do?
Well, you're thinking about all the things you're going to say and do.
Yes.
I'm lining up pieces of chocolate next to my mouse for strategic time. I always have four pieces of chocolate for the show.
Oh, one for every 15 minutes or every 20 minutes?
One for each segment of the show.
Oh, so have you had your A-block chocolate yet?
No, I'm not. It's ready. I'm about to let her rip in a minute. But
hey, how?
You know what's good though? I barely made it home in time for the show. So my lunch consisted of, it's the beef milkshake, but the solid material for lunch,
yeah,
was a cup of Chex Mix. You know, it's that time of year.
Oh, wait, Chex Mix with chocolate? Is that what you're going to tell me?
No. This is Chex. Like, everybody has their own permutation of Chex Mix.
Yes.
And ours is objectively the best. But the one thing that I'm not used to in Chex Mix, but this, we have interloper Chex Mix. So we have our own Chex Mix that we made, and then somebody else brought some Chex Mix, and we had a little bit of that, so we dumped it in with our Chex Mix.
Ooh, combo mix.
Yes, it's like, and there's like a subterfuge of Chex Mix mixed in where sometimes you'll get foreign Chex Mix. and it's actually, and so I, sometimes I don't like, but the one thing that I've decided that I do like is roasted pecans.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're talking to someone who lives in pecan country, so they are very good.
When you roast them, they give you they change their molecular structure or something. It's they're like soft, but they have a slight crunch to them.
Mm-hmm.
And like, look, I mean, I'm a huge fan of nuts.
He loves his nuts.
I love my nuts. And what, like, all different kinds of nuts, big ones,
yeah,
little ones,
oh yeah,
lumpy ones, with flavoring on them. Like it's one of the staples of my diet. And, but I've always like pecans and walnuts. This is just one classification of nuts that I've stayed away from because they're always kind of like chewy. Do you know what I'm talking? Like rubbery?
Yeah, almost? I know exactly. I think maybe we should just stop for a second.
Okay.
Because I am confident there are foreigners listening to this podcast, checking into the boardroom thinking, Chex Mix? What is Chex Mix?
Foreigners?
Chex Mix is basically roasted, salted Chex cereal. Now, before you continue, my family tradition is called Nuts and Bolts.
Oh, I don't know this one.
And so that's Chex Mix added in pretzel sticks and Cheerios.
Oh, yes. Okay, I've seen this. That's it's sort of like the twig and berries of Chex Mix.
Yes, but we call them Nuts and Bolts. Yeah, twig and berries.
Nuts and Bolts is probably a more family-friendly
just a little bit. Just a little bit. Yes. Yes, and for some reason, it's a Christmas thing, isn't it?
Always. It's always like you're not allowed to make Chex Mix or Nuts and Bolts or whatever permutation you have. You're not allowed to make it before Thanksgiving. It is a post-Thanksgiving only.
Yes. Yeah, you're right.
Snack.
Hey, now, do you fist your nuts?
I do not fist my nuts.
Excuse me. I've had requests from the boardroom. I need to play it.
Just go for it, John. Tell us your peeve about the fisting method of eating snacks on an airplane. Okay.
I see this on the airplane, and it's very annoying, and I think it will result in fights breaking out because it's just so annoying to watch. Guy takes his bag of peanuts, and he throws a pile of them into his palm of his hand, and then he makes a fist. Around the nuts.
Around the nuts.
And then he shakes his fist to try to bring a nut to the little hole.
Stop. To the little hole.
And then he throws a nut in his mouth from his fist.
From his fist.
Then he does it again. He shakes and throws and shakes and throws. It is annoying as hell to watch.
There you go.
JCD in rare form.
Yes. He actually does not like that little bit there.
No, I can imagine that he wouldn't. He would find it annoying.
Oh, please. That's just whatever side of the bed he got up on. That has nothing to do with it. It's not consistent at all. Mm. Hey, how was New York City for Thanksgiving?
New York was great. It was Times Square was nuts on Thanksgiving. It was just wall to wall.
And did it smell of weed everywhere?
Oh, God. I mean, I think I texted you. It literally smelled like weed exiting the plane.
LaGuardia or JFK?
Yes.
LaGuardia.
Wow. LaGuardia. Yeah, I mean, we got off the ramp coming out of the plane. And immediately in the airport, it was weed. But I will say that flying on Thanksgiving Day.
Oh, is the way to go.
That's pretty good.
That's the way to go because no one flies on Thanksgiving Day. And why did you go to New York for Thanksgiving and then fly home on Thanksgiving Day?
Because it was because if I waited the day after, it would be horrible.
Right. So did you celebrate Thanksgiving early?
No, we celebrated with family after like the next weekend, like this past weekend. So like on the Sunday after.
Oh, okay. You were just in New York for a trip.
Yeah, it was just me and Melissa and Marigold went up there for we were there for like 3.5 days.
Did you go to Broadway? Did you catch a show?
Yeah,
Broadway. What did you see?
We saw a great show. We went and I think it was Wednesday. Yeah. It was Wednesday. So Wednesday we went to MoMA, the Museum of Modern Art,
which is fantastic.
It is, and so we spent most of the day at MoMA, and then that night we saw a Broadway show called Art.
Oh,
with Neil Patrick Harris.
Oh, he's good. James Corden was in that too.
James Corden,
interesting.
James Corden stole the show. That guy really? Is a fantastic stage actor.
Oh yes. Wow, I didn't know that about him. That's cool.
Oh, he's top notch. He was by far the best actor on the stage. And Bobby Cannavale, yeah,
I don't know who that is.
Cannavale, he's one of those guys that's been in like tons of stuff, and you know his face
probably in all the Christmas movies we're watching.
Yeah, and like NCIS and CSI, and he's in all these things, but you just never know his name. But
Cannavale,
show and
Cannavale,
Cannavale, Cannavale, yeah, Bobby Cannavale.
Oh yeah, I recognize him. Sure, of course. Yeah, he is in all the Christmas movies. He's in Mall Cop.
Mall Cop. Yeah, he's Mall Cop.
I recognize him right away as a Mall Cop guy. Yeah, of course.
Riding around on the Segway. Yeah,
yeah.
But. It was great because you spend all the day at the Museum of Modern Art and then you go see the show. And the premise of the show is Neil Patrick Harris's character buys a piece of modern art. It's this giant canvas that's just white. There's nothing on it.
It's my favorite modern art.
$300,000.
Yeah, that's great.
And so then, the whole rest of the show is like his friends trying to make sense out of this idiotic purchase that he made. Yeah, it's good.
Oh, that's funny.
Oh, I didn't toot or tweet. That's right.
I told you would forget.
I did because I was too busy with my chocolate.
Oh, yeah, he played Joe DiMaggio. That's right.
In what?
In Blonde.
Blonde.
Blonde. Blonde was the biopic of Marilyn Monroe. But he's been in gangster movies. He's been this is what you call a working actor, man. Holy crap.
He's been in a million things.
Yeah, every year he's got at least three projects going. Man, that's fantastic. God bless him.
Yeah, it was a great trip. Yeah, it was really fun.
Oh, good. I'm happy for you.
And we stayed real close to Central Park, but the hotel wasn't super expensive. It was nice. Yeah.
What hotel was that?
The Park Central Hotel.
Oh, that's a nice hotel.
Have you stayed there before?
I know all the hotels in New York.
Yeah, it was like a affordable.
Me and President Trump, we know everything about real estate in New York.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Bros. Yeah.
Yeah. The Central Park West, I guess, right?
That was, well,
I think it's Central Park West.
It was south of Central Park.
Then it's Central Park South.
Okay.
As we say.
I don't know the layout very well. I mean, all I know is like we're right below, what's the little circle that's on the corner?
Columbus Circle.
Columbus Circle. It was like three blocks south of Columbus.
Circle. Okay. Yeah. You're Central Park West then. Yeah. I used to live right in that very area, also known as Hell's Kitchen.
Oh, yeah. So I think Hell's Kitchen is a little bit to the west
mm-hmm.
of that. Is that right?
Yep.
Over there where Chelsea Market and all that stuff is?
It's a little bit further. But yeah, the general area.
Okay.
Yeah, general area.
I don't know the regions there. They all kind of blend together.
And did you listen to any podcasts while you were on your trip, or you just completely shunned the entire industry?
I don't think I did listen to any podcasts.
Busted, man.
No, I don't think I listened to anything. No, I did listen to, well, I listened to audiobook, but I did not listen to any podcast.
No.
I was decompressing.
Yeah, that's good. You deserved it.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Welcome back. Yeah, welcome back. The API mind. Is crashing. What's going on? Yeah. Fix stuff.
500 errors. Yes, that's great. Oh, man. I will have that fixed as quickly as possible. So I don't know if that's it, but.
So a couple of things that are just really notable that's happening right now. We'll talk about alt enclosures and video, because that was pretty hot on the master. But also, what was I going to say? Everybody, I think this is a good thing. I'm not quite sure yet, but everybody seems to be becoming a hosting company these days.
Oh, it's rampant. Yeah.
And I think in general, I think that's a really good thing, because it kind of solidifies the importance of RSS. I know some are, you know, uploading to YouTube with an API or whatever, but pretty much everybody is giving you an RSS feed, whether they're good or not. I mean, if it passes validation, it's technically good. But you know, I think everyone is declaring the namespace technically fantastic. Not putting in the features yet, but the whole general idea that you start hosting and you have to have an RSS feed, that kind of solidifies the whole concept as, you know, a decentralized media network.
Yeah, it kind of sets it in stone or whatever, like entrenches it a little bit.
Yeah.
No, I agree. It's
it also gives the opportunity for hosting companies to show, you know, competition. Like, hey, we got this. The big thing we all know is stats. You got to have the right stats. If you don't have stats, it's no good stats. But just on that for a second for the hosting guys. Man, so we have stats with Godcaster, and I did our first Godcaster U for...
Went great, by the way.
Thank you. For some of our clients. And so what we give them is a full download of the current and the past month of all of the data that we've collected, the entire log for their particular stuff. And, you know, I've been involved. I mean, back in the OnRamp/ThinkNewIdeas days, we would charge for our statistics to our customers who were like Reebok and Continental Airlines and Anheuser-Busch. But we wouldn't just give them some charts, you know, pie charts and bar charts and, ooh, look, number go up. We didn't give them that. Yes, we gave them that, but we sold it as an entire service, which he called ASAP, which is an acronym
good name.
Advanced Statistical Analysis Program.
Oh, I love it. That's like a, what's the thing from War Games? Whopper?
Well, yes. So if you can name it, you can sell it. And yeah. And so what we do is we get on the phone, or in certain cases, we fly to the client because we didn't have Zoom back in the day. And we'd sit down and we'd say, well, here's what we're seeing. Here's the analysis. Here's what we believe is going on. And so kind of following on that idea, because we, you know, people look, we have a stats page. And it's actually quite comprehensive because we have plays, we have shares, we have engagement, we have funding link stats, you know, when someone hit the funding link, all these wonderful things. But it's basically a one page, and I know exactly how people use it. Oh, number go up. So what I did is for this university thing, for this you know, kind of educational moment, I said, watch this. And I dragged the I dragged the CSV file into ChatGPT is what I used in this case. And I just started asking it questions. Stuff like, well, where was it played most? Oh, it's played on the mobile app. Okay. How many times did someone listen to the live stream? Because we have a little lit tag in all of our stuff. And then switch over to something on demand to listen to a podcast. And it gave statistics on that. And which shows were switched to the most. And then I said, give me an executive analysis. And it interestingly said, hey, you know, it looks like these shows were switched to the most. These get the most engagement. So you probably want to highlight this category of programming, which was Bible teaching and something else. That's something that I think hosting companies should explore, whether you're using your own model or, you know, you tie in with an API. When you give your, you know, the whole start podcasting, keep podcasting, when you give someone kind of free rein to ask questions, and we sent all of my prompts off to everybody so they can try it for themselves. It's a whole new way of looking at your statistics. Something to think about, because it really opened people's eyes. They're like, wow, okay, I can get. Now, of course, they think that, you know, the way I position it is, yeah, we, our data set is so rich and it's so fine tuned for the LLM, it knows exactly what to do with it.
Well, that's kind of the case though, because you are feeding it raw, well structured, well, like, named data.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that's it's as good as it gets, I guess. Like, because you're not just saying you're not just giving sort of like vague numbers or charts or something like that. What that data is that you drug in there, and this is kind of an interesting thing, because, you know, like Cotton Gin said, how can you trust it, though? It'll hallucinate whatever you want it to. I am interested in how. So here's the thing I've been wondering. I understand how LLMs function in sort of the. I can't do the math on them, obviously, but it's a understandable concept that it's a prediction engine that predicts the next, you know, piece of text.
Mm-hmm.
And you can even understand like a diffusion generator that does images, where it starts with sort of like a solid matrix, and then removes everything that's not a guess at what this image might be.
Mm-hmm.
So these sort of like tensor based things they're conceptually, you can understand them. The one part of the flow I don't understand, and this is going to, I want to expound on this in a little bit, because this ties into the new open aggregator project that I'm that I just published yesterday. The one thing I don't understand is how that gets translated into some sort of action. So if I say if I put a stats file into a chatbot, LLM chatbot, and say, here's a file, analyze this file and show and tell me blah blah blah. Well, the analysis part where it's supposed to look at the file you gave it and understand what the columns are and that it is this sort of, you know, data representation and that kind of thing. That's the part that I don't fully understand.
Oh, I can tell you.
That's not just text prediction.
I can tell you exactly what it's doing.
Oh, cool.
And you can, and you can see this very easily with Grok for sure. I think ChatGPT. Okay. Because I looked at this specifically, but I've seen it. You know, I'll give a simpler example. Tell me if during the shutdown in the United States, the government shutdown, if healthcare insurance stocks went up or down. So there's an agentic part, which is the data collection. So it goes out, it collects stock prices. At first, it determines what is a health insurance stock. I mean, these things, it's pretty good at that, even with the predictive, you know, just understanding language. And it does that very quickly, quicker than I could do it. So it brings all that in. And then it literally, if you click that little, you know, the little thinking thing where it says thinking, you keep seeing the lines of what it's doing.
Yes,
if you click
it's
that
internal
box.
Internal deliberation. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it'll show you building code. And it literally writes Python scripts to do the calculations that you asked it to do.
Right.
That's why I love doing my vibe coding in Python, because these things all use Python. And so that's the math part, that it understands how to corroborate that to the question, that, or at least it tries, and you can easily verify it if that's the question that you ask. So as long as in the data set you're talking about plays and shares and support clicks, that's interpretable from the data we give it from Godcaster.
So you're saying, okay, let me sort of talk this back to you and see if I understand. So you're saying that when you drop a CSV file in there, this is you know, the stats log, the big log, mm-hmm, that we give them.
Yeah, it goes along with your nuts.
you give them a huge fat log. They drop it into ChatGPT or whatever. ChatGPT is determining that this is a CSV file, and so then it in the background writes code that will import the CSV file.
I think that only happens when you ask the question. So it sees the file, it just sits there. Okay. Then you ask a question, and then it creates code to calculate the question. So it's already, and I believe that simple questions like give me a total, give me an average, these are all in the corpus. It can map those things. And of course, I'm sure I'm not the only one who's thrown stats in there. So it already has more things that it can work with. But ultimately, it's building code.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that makes more sense.
Which is great, because you can copy it and then run it yourself.
Yeah. So I guess you shortcut that for common things, like if you know. People are dropping CSVs into your chatbot all day long. You probably have something in place that it can just call out and quit and not have to create code every single time.
Yeah, see, that I don't think.
You don't?
I've been very disappointed with iterating with an LLM sucks. I mean, whatever you're doing, you ask it. Like, so I was writing the outline for this Godcaster U presentation. I love outlines. Outlines work for my brain. And, you know, PowerPoint literally has an outline mode. So you can, you know, stick your outline in there and then create your slides from it. So I throw it into Grok, ChatGPT, and Gemini. And I say, build a slide presentation. Grok says, oh, I can't do that. The ChatGPT, oh, no, I can't do that. Gemini said, sure, here's a slide deck. And it created slides for every single node in my outline with pictures. I'm like, wow, this is, and it actually, you could download it, but the slideshow worked right there in the browser. I have no idea how to call it because I asked it several times in different context windows, hey, create a slideshow. It didn't do that. So I just stuck with that one. Like, okay, I want this very surprised looking person on slide 7. I want that person to look like a middle-aged white lady looking surprised. And then it deleted it deleted all the pictures, gave me no pictures, changed text. You cannot iterate with this stuff. You can't make incremental changes. It just is not capable. No, I haven't found to be capable of that.
Well, that was also my experience with Midjourney is you would get the first picture set of pictures you got, that's as good as you're going to get.
Yeah.
Your attempt to change and like modify it, it can't only gets
that.
Worse.
It can't do that.
Yeah. It only get so do you mind if we foray into
I don't want you to foray. I would like you to sachet.
I would like to momentarily sachet into the feed parser, but
yeah.
Before we do that though, you were talking about hosting and Sam had a question.
Ah, yes.
Morning about
you heretic.
Like, so Sam's question was, if the feed has an HLS video in an episode as an alternate enclosure, should you play that first instead of the audio? Before I give my opinion, what do you think? I think I already know it, but what do you think?
Well, I liked Oscar Mary's choice in this, which came after my vote. I was the only person that voted when I voted. I'm like, 100%.
Oh, you were the one.
It's just me. It's just me. Okay. The decision that Fountain has made is if it's mobile on the app, it's audio. If it's on the web player, it's video. I like that a lot.
Yeah, that's a good. Yeah, I can see that. Uh-huh.
Now, what you said, you heretic, you said, oh, we should probably do video. Let everybody know we're doing videos.
I did not say it in that voice.
Yes, it was that voice. I heard that voice.
I did not say it in that voice.
Yeah, we should probably, because, you know, podcast industrial complex, everybody thinks YouTube's video. We should do video, make a video.
My keyboard won't even do that voice. That's not what I did.
That's how I heard it.
What I said was, at the risk of being a heretic, I'd say play the video. No, I said, here's my thought. Right now, if somebody goes to the trouble of putting that in their feed, they probably want people to see the video because it's so rare. And so I'm like, for now, it's probably a good signal that somebody wants, like, they want their video out there in the world. But, like, long term,
well, I mean, I'm going to agree with you.
Aha!
Which should sound like this to you. I'm going to agree with you, baby.
That's the way I heard it.
I'm all in with you.
That's the way I heard it.
I think it is, because I don't do video. But if I were doing video, I'm 95% confident I would want video to surface first.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because you put a lot of effort into it. Yeah.
Yeah. But then, unless you're me, and then it never even works. Half the time, it doesn't even have audio.
Are you even doing OBS anymore?
Not right now.
No.
I forget. This is the problem. I forget. Hey, every week I forget to do it.
Amen. I've forgotten to hit record. You know,
you
stuff happens. It happened not too long ago, actually, when I forgot to hit record.
And the one, like, I know, I just can't. There's so much stuff that's broken that I can't get to. I mean, my Umbral node is broken.
Yeah, well, you're hurting the business, man. We're not getting any, hurting the show. We're not getting any sats.
I know. I feel horrible about it.
But the umbral node is that's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to debug. It's all Docker containers.
And I've done so many times,
all of a sudden the whole thing quits. I start it back up and it says, oh, this Docker already exists. This Docker already exists. So then you have to sudo stop Docker, paste Docker ID, sudo remove Docker, paste Docker ID. You've got to do that for about 10 of them, depending on how many apps you have installed. And then it'll start back up.
What I don't get is I did nothing. I did nothing to this umbral.
That's a feature of umbral. It's always exciting.
Yeah. You don't know what you're going to get.
That's right.
But now when I go to the localhost on my umbral, I get the default Apache 2. It works page.
Oh, goodness. Yeah.
Yeah. Now it's just an Apache default. Okay, what's happening here? I did nothing. And all I did was install the Albi Hub.
Yeah. Try 127.0.0.1. That may do better than localhost. I've had that happen.
On the umbral?
Yeah. Instead of localhost.
Yeah, same thing. Apache default page.
Unplug it and plug it back in.
All right, see ya. This is terrible. This is not a good product.
No, it's not. Start 9, baby. That's the way to go.
I was waiting for your ad. I was waiting for the ad. Ad. For Start
9. Oh yeah, ad. Okay. They did give me a box. That's for sure. They gave me a box. Oh, did they? And that's what helped. And that's how we got helipad in there.
No, actually, it's not the 1 terabyte. It's not a drive space issue because I did fix. It was getting close, and I fixed it. I cloned it onto a new unit. That's been fixed for a while. Yeah, I don't know. It's a pain in the butt. It's a pain in the butt, is what it is.
Yeah. Oh.
Which I seem to be using that term a whole lot lately.
Well, I can't believe that your day job is all of a sudden so painful. Isn't it supposed to end? Or do we have another rush towards January 1st or December 31st?
No, December is my busiest month of the year.
What happened? It's April, October, December.
April is a lot of after hours work. Then October is same way. But December is installing all the New Year's tax software and onboarding interns for the new year. So that it's a lot to do in a small amount of time.
Got any hot interns next year, Dave?
I wouldn't know. I would not know.
Oh, you're just onboarding them?
Yeah. All I have is names, which is funny. Like this new generation, that's coming out of college, the names, very confusing.
Oh, they spell them in weird ways.
Yes. They spell them in weird ways. It's girls with boy names, boys with girl names. Like you can't tell who is what.
Do you have to? do you have pronouns in your corporate profiles?
No, we do not. Do you like? It's like the name. I'm trying to think of one I did in the last few years.
Vivian.
That one. No, we, like Alex.
Oh, yeah. With an I.
Yes. Yeah. That kind of stuff. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, young people. They're a waste of time.
When I was a kid, we were just called Bob and Alice.
Yeah. Although simple. I do see a resurgence of old names, though.
Yeah. Like Muhammad.
Older. No. Like older names like Jim. Yeah, and Bob and stuff like that. They're making a comeback.
Yeah, that's groovy. So let's talk about your Aggie.
Yeah. So,
what have you done?
So, I guess firstly, I've realized that I can't build everything myself. Too spread out. So I would like to But I do have a vision for the way that I think things should work. And I want to try, I would like to try something. And I hope that this gets a lot of
support, traction.
Yeah, I hope people
PRs
will spread the word. Yes. Mm-hmm. I hope people will spread the word to get other people involved. One thing I'm really terrible at is getting help with things. So like sysadmin stuff, developer stuff, and mostly it's because my time is so limited, is so crunched that it's really hard to find like an hour for a Zoom call to even explain to somebody what I need help with.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you have to go through, this is very similar. Thank you, Eric. I appreciate that. So, like Eric has offered to help. So many people have offered to help over the years. And I feel bad for not engaging more with them. Like Archie has asked to help multiple times. So many people have. The problem is, this is very similar to the way, like if you have a piece of software that you've been writing in private for years and years and years, and then you want to open source it.
It's scary.
It takes hours and hours of work to go through and make sure that you are, that you don't have other proprietary code that you can't, that would be illegal to release, to make sure you don't have hidden secrets in there that shouldn't be exposed.
passwords,
API keys hard coded, things like, yeah. Like
passwords.
Some things are just, you want to make sure that you don't have code that's shared in this also used in another place, that exposing this code would also expose the back end of a running software that doesn't need to be exposed.
Mm.
So that now, because you used the same low-level function in two different places, you make it public here. Now they know that that's the same function that you used in this other code that is not public.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many things that you have to do. It takes hours. This is very... It's in a similar way, getting help with a project like Podcast Index means spending a lot of time with a person explaining to them how the system works, giving them credentials to get into the system, but just enough credentials, because you don't mean handing out root to the whole world. So you have to, it takes a lot of time to bring someone on board to help in a meaningful way with these things.
So tell me you set this project up correctly from the beginning.
So here's the idea. The podcast index, it works fine. But
uh-oh, the dreaded F word. Whenever my wife says, yeah, I'm fine.
Fine.
It's no good. You got to step it up.
It works fine, but the... how should I say this? There is... The design of it goes back to the very beginning, 2020. When we built this entire thing in about 6 weeks.
Yeah.
From scratch. Literally.
Pretty much. Yeah.
6 weeks. And it was stupid fast. And the goal was get something to work. So, and then once you have something that works.
Well, now you've introduced technical debt for the rest of your life.
Technical debt. Exactly. So, the technical debt in the podcast index is a feature. That is, I've been okay with our technical debt because it's not the type of debt that comes back and sort of like bites you in the rear in the future in a way where like you get stuck and you can't move forward. It's not that type of technical debt. This type of technical debt just means that things are just not as efficient as they could be. And so that touches on the second leg of Podcast Index, which is always the financial issue. We got to run things as cheaply as possible. So our type of technical debt just means that in order to kind of scale up, we have to throw more money at it. And that's the thing we can't do. So rather than trying to, I've been thinking about this for weeks now. Rather than trying to onboard a bunch of people into sort of a part-time sysadmin role, and again, I'm not opposed to that. I'm not opposed to it at all. But that is very time-consuming. I would rather, in addition to doing a little bit of that, I would also like to sort of allow the community to build new versions of the Podcast Index, to build the next generation Podcast Index themselves in public. Mm. And that way they already know how the system works just because they built it. And so as we build it together, all together, we can document the way the pieces fit. And I can bring in somebody like Archie to begin to put these new pieces together from the beginning. So we build the community sysadmin effort into the new product.
I like it. That makes a lot of sense.
So the first sort of attempt at this is the feed parser repository that I just put up. And it is, so there's a few things that we need to go over. I will stop now to pause for any questions you have.
No.
Okay. So the first thing is we're going to build it. Clearly, we're going to build it in the open. So this will be the first piece of software that will live in. We'll do this in phases. Okay. And I need to document this whole, there needs to be a repo for this whole build process. And we'll do that. I'm going to do that too. That's the next thing I'm going to do. This phased approach, I think I envision it going like this. First thing we need is an aggregation stack. And the aggregation stack will look like this. It will be a feed polling agent, and we already have one that's pretty good. I think it can be improved, but Aggravator, which is our current feed polling agent, is an asynchronous feed poller written in Rust. It's very fast, and I think it works good. That thing outputs it downloads the files, the XML feed files, and saves them as files on the file system with some metadata attached. I think we're good there, but we will bring that along as well. This repo I just posted yesterday.
Did you post that on the Podcast Index GitHub or?
Yeah, it's on. There's a link to it in the IRC. Eric PP posted it in the the chat room.
Okay,
the boardroom. So the feed parser, what it's going to do, and here's the goal for this repo. It needs to be a Rust. It's a Rust built process, a single process that will be launched, it will pull in all of the XML files that were downloaded by Aggravator. It will parse them using an XML stream parser and then output a text file that contains a JSON representation of a SQL insert or update statement.
Mm-hmm.
And I say like a representation in quotes. It'll be an object that can be easily assembled into a text SQL statement. So it's meant to run and then exit, mm-hmm. not be a continuously running process.
Mm-hmm. Well, that you just lock me out of developing for it.
Okay. Sorry. So it will execute, you know, on a timer or whatever. The inputs folder is where the XML feed files from Aggravator are going to live. It will pull those files in, process them using the stream parser, and then output a JSON file. And if we can make it have some sort of plug-in architecture, that'd be great. But that's not.
So this is the no etag URL and then index ID.
Yeah, so that's the file names will have a pattern. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And then, so that is the feed parser. So what you're going to be left with after the feed parser runs is an outputs folder that has a bunch of JSON files in it that will then be picked up by the SQL statement builder process, and that will run on each aggregator node. So this is the next piece of the puzzle. You'll have a SQL statement builder that will read the JSON object, build a SQL statement from it, and stick it into the queue server, stick it in the queue.
Mm.
And that'll be the next piece of the puzzle. There'll be a queue server. Now, this can be something as simple as like Redis or something like that. I mean, this doesn't necessarily have to be something we build, but there needs to be some sort of queue server that lives in the infrastructure where all of these SQL statements are going to be placed in a first in, first out fashion. Then you'll have the next piece of the stack will be a SQL execution agent, which picks objects off of the queue in FIFO order and just executes them to put them into the database. Now, this SQL execution agent that is plucking off the queue and executing, this thing needs to monitor a few things. It needs to monitor the process, it needs to monitor the database server to look for how much load it currently is experiencing and adjust its insert, update, delete pressure accordingly. So you don't, you don't want to have it just slamming the server.
And you already have an endpoint for that server load?
No, I think we're going to have to tap into whatever the underlying database metrics are mm-hmm. that the database server provides. Now, I have used MySQL forever. It's the only database server that I've. Well, I mean, I've also used Microsoft SQL Server, but I've never used Postgres, and I know that Postgres is what everybody loves. And I'm fine with switching. I will just have to learn this new thing. So if the reason I say that is initially, I think we should start by just replacing the aggregation stack and have it tap into our current database.
Can I ask a question?
Okay.
Yeah. What are the intended downstream benefits of this new aggregator?
So the way the current aggregators work is they the parser and the SQL insertion functions are happening in the same process. So the these are Node.js processes that run. They pick up the feed files, parse them into a JavaScript object in memory, and then convert those objects into SQL statements that are then executed. So there's 9 aggregators currently. There was 10. Now we dropped to 9. There's 9 aggregators, and all 9 of them are constantly connecting to the database to write to it. So none of them know at any given time how much load there is. They're all just competing to put their stuff into the database as fast as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And this means that it's the load on the server is very spiky. It just goes through surges all the time. And I'm constantly having to sort of tweak it and massage things to make sure
you don't get log jammed.
Yes, exactly right.
Yeah,
Eric, it could do that too. Yeah, we could just queue the JSON rather than SQL. It's fine.
Can I have another question inserted here?
Yeah, sure.
With a new aggravator stack, will we be able to detect changes made to older episodes or feed items like image tag, etc., and reparse those?
Yes.
That's what I call a downstream effect.
Yes. So the reason is because if you have all the SQL adjusting actions, if you have all the SQL actions being queued, then you can adjust the load accordingly. Now you know queues also have problems too. I mean, everything has trade-offs. And the one thing you can say about the current model is it's fast. It's very fast.
Yeah.
And it is it's fast at the expense of sometimes bringing the server like to its knees. I mean, it can just if we spun up part of the reason the database doesn't actually just crash is because, or lock out, is because we have underpowered aggregators. If I boosted the horsepower on all the aggregators to, let's, you know, to beefier VMs, it could pump so much data at that database, it would just lock it.
Right.
So the queue thing is really good for being able to just feed the database at a predictable rate. But predictable is also a synonym for slow.
Mm.
So we need, so it is going to come at the expense of a little bit of slowness. But that doesn't mean like the data has been aggregated. It's going to take a little longer
to get updated in the database.
Yeah, right. So that's the downside, but I think the trade-off is worth it. And when I say slower, I don't mean like significantly slower. I mean, I'm talking about like the difference of a few minutes.
Right.
You know, versus a few seconds. So if something shows up 5 minutes later than it would have under the current system, I think that's okay. That's acceptable.
Oh, there goes my pod ping pitch.
No, 90 seconds, everybody.
90 seconds, your podcast is updated.
But, you know, we don't have to treat everything as equal also.
Ah, okay. No agenda show plus 5.
Plus 5, yeah. you know, so if certain things like live items.
Yeah, you got to
hit the top of the stack.
Yeah.
Or we could have 2 queues. you know, one for paying customers
and and one for the rest.
more, I mean, you can have as many queues as you need. Like you can have, you know, a live queue, a standard polling queue, and then a Podbean queue. So we can configure this however we need to, but this overall, this is a better architecture.
Yeah.
And so I think phase one is build the feed parser in such a way that it will run and push things into our existing database. And then once we have that, we can look at potentially modifying, changing the database. Mm. If that's something that we all feel like is a good thing to do. And, you know, I'm fine. I will eat it. I will eat my discomfort. It's fine. So we can do, we could do that. And then I think phase three would be, build a new version of the API, and everybody has, everybody can take a hand in that. And we can all build version two of the API together.
What improvements or what things are you thinking about the API? Just more functionality, more different types of endpoints.
Yeah, faster. The having some things that the index doesn't have now, like paging.
Oh yeah, like that. Yeah, paging is a big one.
Yeah. So just. This is not so much because things don't work. This is more of attempt to bring everybody on board, but in a way that they built it themselves, so they already know how to administer it.
Ooh, I like that. And please put in hooks everywhere for my potty bot.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Version two of the API will be potty friendly.
Yes. So the potty can go in and help you. One moment.
Fully one potty moment. Trained.
Let me check. Let me check that for you. Oh, yeah. Looks like you're in Q5. Deposit $100 in Bitcoin to move to the top of the stack. Thank you for using PottyBot.
Was it RBF that replaced by fee?
Yeah. Exactly.
To the top of the stack. Yeah. Yeah. RIQ, replacing Q. Yes. Yeah. So everything, it'll be fully potty trained. And that's the second part of this, is that everything in that repo right now was built with AI. I have not handwritten a single piece of code in that repo.
Really? You're using, what's that guy? His system?
Who? Jason?
Jason Guru. From Podcast Guru, using his infrastructure setup?
I'm using his advice, but I'm using JetBrains. They have a new thing called Junie. It's their Junie. LLM.
Junie, agent. Meet Potty.
There's a perfect match. And so... Junie is integrated into the IDE, and then you can just tell it sees your whole project. You don't have to put everything in one file.
So what has your experience been with Junie?
I love it and hate it at the same time.
Hmm.
I love the fact that I can have it do a bunch of the boilerplate sort of drudgery code for me. But I also despise the feeling that I don't understand what I just did. Like, I feel so mentally disconnected from the code. For instance, somebody could clone this repo right now, and you could get into, I'm just going to tell you from the JetBrains perspective. You could open up your JetBrains IDE, Rust Rover is what I use. You could open up Rust Rover, go into the Junie agent and say, and say, add support to this, add support to this program for the podcast colon transcript tag. And you'd be 95% probably it's going to work the first try.
Wow.
It's really, really good. But then you have no idea what it did. You know it works because it compiles and it gives you output. But then you have to go through there
and figure out what it's doing. Yeah.
And because otherwise, it's just this opaque
thing. Do find that when I'm vibe coding, it documents things very meticulously, which for me is like, oh, okay, I see what this block is doing. I get what you're doing here. I can handle it when it's documented properly. And that's probably the, having worked with developers for most of my professional life, that's probably been the biggest bone of contention amongst developers as well. It's like, what do you do? Yes. Can't you document your code? Document your code, man!
Oh, the worst experience with that I ever had was trying to modify Frontier, the compiled version of Frontier. There was nothing
documented. No,
not a single comment in the entire code base. And I was like, hey, every now and then you'd run into a /DW and a date.
Yeah.
You're like,
thanks, Dave Weiner.
That doesn't help me.
Thanks.
So yes, it's doing a pretty good job. And I've also had to be explicit about, I will say, add support for the iTunes colon block tag and document your changes in the code. I'll have to say something like that. And and it's pretty good about it.
Yeah.
Now, and I want this thing to be LLM friendly. So that means people are welcome to, when they submit PRs on this thing, they're welcome to just go nuts. Use every AI tool, LLM tool, whatever you want to use, because this all needs to fit into our lives. This needs to be easy on our time. And this is another goal with this project is for me to force myself to become comfortable with these tools. And the only way to do it is to do it. People are welcome to change, to make this code. It's compilable. You can download it, run it right now, and it will work. There are sample files in the repo. So there's two folders. There's a sample inputs folder and a sample outputs folder. And you can take all the files from the sample inputs folder, and those are just XML feeds. You can copy those over to the inputs folder, cargo run to build and run the process, and it should give you an outputs folder full of JSON files.
Now, what IDE are you using? Just out of curiosity.
It's called Rust Rover.
Rust Rover. Okay.
Yeah, it's from JetBrains. And I have not used a whole ton of them, but as far as like the way I like to work, having this LLM agent like baked right into the IDE is pretty rad. It feels really nice to just say, like build a new module for blah, blah, blah. And it will create the file for you. It'll put your class in and all this kind of stuff. Having the agent have control of your IDE feels like finally the way that it makes sense to me to work. Now the one thing I wish it did, and it may do this, but I just haven't seen it yet, and I'm still new at this, is I do wish that it would give, that there's some way to have the Git commits also include the prompts that were used to create the code. Because I have not handwritten a single part of this yet. I just know what I want and I know how Rust works. And so it's easy for me to tell it what to do. And I can tell if it's doing it in the right way because I already know what it's supposed to kind of look like. So I can say something like, the initial version of this was, I just started, you know, saying what I wanted, you know, create a process that opens each file in the inputs folder. These files have this format. I want it to be parsed with this part, with this crate and the outputs stream to this other file. I just started describing and it was slowly building this thing. And at one point I said, okay, now modify this, the current code to be process the files asynchronously. And it rearranged all the code, made it all async, await, and all that went fine. But it really would be a nice thing to have is a track record of all the prompts that I used. And as we go forward, if somebody adds support for something, it would be great to have those prompts in a place where we can find them.
Sure, sure.
And so I just haven't explored that part yet, so I don't know if that's something that's easy to do or not. Because I would like everybody else to build this with LLMs as well. Let's try to do something crazy here.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. Sounds good.
So this could be the first crack at it. And then if this goes well, and people are contributing code, and it's building and it's working, then, that we just go into the next step and just start building these pieces one by one. And you know, the thing that gets you with all RSS aggregators is the edge cases.
Of course. And those are well documented in your brain.
And in party time.
Mm.
So we can go through and sort of we can kind of like save ourselves from the broken stuff ahead of time.
Yeah.
You know, so we don't have to build it and wait for everything to break again and then fix 25 different things we've already fixed before.
Right.
But you have to go through that. You know, we just have to go through and that'll be something to do for me is like go through the party time code and look and say, okay, here's where I made a special workaround for this edge case. Here's where I did this edge case, and we can document that. And then, yeah, exactly, Chad. Pre-break it, and then fix it before it bites us. So I don't know. We'll see how this goes.
I love it. No, I think it's a great idea. I'm installing JetBrains PyCharm as we speak for myself.
PyCharm is a great tool. I think that's what Alex uses.
Well, it's time for me to get into an IDE.
You need to graduate. Yeah, you need to have an IDE.
Yeah, I've been resisting it.
Yeah, but I don't like the feeling of being mentally disconnected from the code. I don't like. I compare that to Godcaster and Podcast Index code, where I may not remember exactly what the code does, but I have a mental picture all the time of where every single thing is.
Of course,
I know exactly what it's doing and how it works.
Yeah,
and so I can usually go to that code within, you know, 10 seconds,
right,
and have an idea of what's happening. Is.
Yeah. And good but logs, here, good logs, good logs is a good thing.
Yes. Lots of logs. Yeah. And so I don't like that feeling. It's very, it feels like wearing glasses and somebody's kind of smeared Vaseline all over them.
Looking through a glass darkly.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. And that's not a great feeling, but I mean, I don't know. Maybe at some point you can go through and have the LLM comment things out in such a way where it's clear. I don't know. I'm going to have to tackle this problem at some point for my own sanity, but it is working.
Love it. I think it's a really good idea, Dave.
And isn't that really the world we live in now with LLMs? It's like, well, it's working. What's it doing? I don't know, but it works.
Yeah. Yes, it's true. That's true. But I have a pretty good idea what I've built.
Yeah.
But when it, because, you know, I haven't graduated yet. So I'm just, here's one big file, 4,000 lines. Enjoy. And it'll fix the problem. But then something mm-hmm. else happens. Like, what did you do? And it won't tell me until I say, hey, this is broken. Oh, yes, you're right. Good catch.
That's interesting. Okay, it's interesting to hear you say this because, like, if I wanted to know what it did, I would just do a diff. And then I could see, but you're not thinking of it in the code terms.
I'm lame.
Could you say make a diff and then explain it to
well,
me?
Well, I can do a diff. I mean, I never even thought of doing that, honestly.
But if you had it explain the diff, like,
oh yeah, but the point is like, I'm not expecting it to do anything. It runs. And then I'd find later, oh, this thing broke. And then now you're into iteration mode. Well, go back and fix that, but leave this. And then something else breaks. Nah, the might as well just start a new session, paste the code in, start over. And it'll fix it within 5 seconds. If it's in its context window, it gets so confused after a while. All of them have the same problem. But you can take something that's broken in Grok, put into ChatGPT, and ChatGPT says, oh, you were almost there. Here, I fixed it.
It's really
messed up.
I know people love Cursor. Daniel and Eric, I know people love Cursor a lot. I've been in JetBrains world for a decade, and I just... It's how I think. I don't want to change IDEs. I can't. I'm just too stuck, man. I'm too stuck. Having to learn two things. This is always the problem with, I think, anything in IT, developers, developing or sysadmin, anything. If you have to learn two things at the same time, it's too much.
Yeah.
You really need to do one thing at a time. And learning how this stuff is working, that is enough for me. I may tackle something like that later, but, we'll see how this goes. Yeah.
Let me see, where are we at time wise? We got a few more minutes. Did I see that, our boy, Spurlock, he is, basically filtering out TTS podcasts on OP3.
TTS podcast?
Yeah, it took me a second. I'm pretty sure that stands for text to speech. As in AI. Yeah. He says there's been a deluge of TTS podcasts. And unless that's some kind of network I'm unaware of, I'm thinking it's text to speech.
I don't know. Where did he post this on Podcast Index Social?
Yeah, he did. It's today.
I'm looking right now. I'm curious what that means. Uh-huh. Let's see. Posts and replies. Let's see. Top CDN. Oh, yeah. Mass-produced TTS podcasts love DAI, especially for gambling ads here in New Jersey. And they all seem to use
PodTrack. That's got to be it.
New data. Updated my ranking of the top third-party analytics. Share of new episodes measured by number one PodTrack down due mainly to my better filtering of TTS podcasts. TTS podcast.
I'm pretty sure it's got to be text to speech.
Yeah, but what? In what?
Well,
of what? What is the text coming from?
Oh no, it's just that's just his version of saying these are AI podcasts.
Oh, is that just a euphemism for AI?
I think so. Yeah, that was kind of my question. Yeah, mass-produced TTS podcasts. So,
I want an example of what those are, because I mean, like, if there's certain things that qualify as like legitimate garbage, I'll take them out of the index. I mean, if it's just like episodes of some bot reading the phone book, like that's
Here it is. Under his live wire update, November 2025 TTS podcast, which is not Tourette's syndrome. That's what I thought first. Like, wow, cool. I need to be in that group.
Turbo Tourette's syndrome.
Turbo Tourette's. There's been a recent marked increase in the number of podcasts across multiple hosting companies that are completely generated by text-to-speech engines. Known TTS podcasts are observed but excluded from this analysis as they are not a reflection of the health of the podcasting world in terms of human output. Filtering these out is a significant amount of work, and I thought about stopping this monthly analysis altogether or making it paywalled or changing the metric entirely. But ultimately, I want these numbers to be available to everyone to be as consistent and as regular as possible over time. You'll notice a one-time drop in PodTrack share in November since most of these generated TTS podcasts tried to monetize via ad insertion and use PodTrack to measure performance. How about that?
Okay. So this is interesting. So would that be inception point?
I don't know.
Is it that type of stuff?
Yes, I believe so. I think that's okay, exactly what he's talking about.
Here's some inception. Here's Bass Fishing Daily from Inception.
Yes,
Point AI.
I think that's definitely one of them. Yeah.
With 12-year-old Wyoming angler lands world record largemouth on tungsten jig. Okay, so let me go into the feed and see if it's PodTrack. Where's the enclosure? Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's PodTrack.
Yeah.
Okay, so I wonder how he's filtering these. Wonder what he said it's a significant amount of work. I wonder if he's having to use some sort of heuristics or something. Yeah, I want to talk to him about this because if we're collectively saying that these things need to be filtered out of things like stats.
Well, I think he's saying it very clearly for himself. Because he's looking at the health of human-based podcasting.
Yeah. Do we need to filter these for real?
I don't think so at all.
So you think this is something specifically to him?
Yeah. He just...
What he's wanting.
Yeah, he says, I just want to show the health of human-based podcasting, and that's why he's excluding them. But I don't think that makes any of these podcasts invalid.
No, I don't think so.
I mean, we're literally talking about writing code with AI. Like, oh, I'm sorry, we can't. That's, you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, it is what it is. I find that a lot less problematic than other things taking place in the world.
For sure. I've been going around and around about this kind of thing in my mind for a long time now, and I don't. So it comes down. So many people are troubled by AI, and it's hard to determine like the actual arguments for and against. The arguments for AI are easy. They're sort of like the Fisher Price version of rhetoric. It's easy. It's like helps me do something I couldn't do before. This way, it's cheaper because blah blah blah. I mean, they're effortless arguments. Mm-hmm. I'm not interested in those arguments. I'm more interested in arguments against AI-generated content, not because I'm trying to find a reason not to like it, there's not a bias there. I'm just interested in good arguments. I'm interested whether... Let me see how to sort of phrase this. It's always interesting to me to explore ideas where you can't really put your finger on a good argument against it.
Hmm.
And what I mean is like, every argument you come up with, you sort of talk yourself out of it.
Yeah.
You're like, well, but I could see it going the other way. And you're like, okay, well, AI generated, AI takes away, it's a threat to people's jobs. And then you're like, well,
no, maybe.
But is it? It's not really. And you're like, okay, well, AI content is, it's filling up the web with crap. And you're like, well
but web's already is full it really? Of crap. Yeah, the web is crap. I mean,
yeah.
Half the news reports, I watch Euro News and I watch Africa News and I watch Deutsche Welle and France 24. And I hear AI voices all the time.
Mm-hmm.
All the time. Like, where do we draw the line? I mean, I've built entire radio stations for customers with AI voices. Doesn't invalidate it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now the scammy part is, I mean, just, I hate dynamically inserted ads in general. I just think it's crap. Half of them I get over here are in Spanish. Like, oh, he's in Texas. Must be a Spanish guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like there's all kinds of, and it's not relevant. It's always gambling, you know, or tequila. Talk about racist.
That's kind of where I'm getting at is you, for all these arguments, you kind of already see that there was something there that pre-existed the AI that was already a problem,
mm-hmm.
and the AI is just accelerating it.
Mm-hmm.
It's an accelerant.
Yeah.
It's a garbage accelerant. And
yes.
It doesn't, you know, I'm just sort of groping in the dark for a sort of like understand like a theory of the way this of what this stuff means, and I think I mean I'm not alone. We all are in a way.
Mm-hmm.
We're all trying to understand this, and like you said, you've built stuff that's amazing. And I don't, yeah, it's just, it's a curious thing. I really have been kind of like, I walk a lot and, you know, during the day and get up from my desk and walk around. And almost every time that I walk around for a while, I think about this topic for a while.
Mm.
I think, I'm not a huge, what's that guy's name? The guy with the big fat rim glasses.
That's wow. The okay,
prognosticator or whatever. You know, the inshittification guy.
Oh,
I'm totally drawing a blank here.
Yeah, Cory
Doctorow.
Cory Doctorow. Yes,
Cory Doctorow.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a huge Cory Doctorow fan. I like some of his stuff. I think he's a little bit nuts on some other stuff, but you know, but he does have, but he's, you know, we can learn something from everybody. And I think he does have good ideas in some really important areas.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of them. And he wrote a good article, today, actually. It's actually not an article. It's a transcript of a speech he gave yesterday,
mm-hmm.
at the University of Washington, where he calls, AI, the, let's see, what's it called? What's the thing that's like a horse with a human head, torso?
Unicorn? No.
No.
Man, bear, pig?
No.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Cory Doctor.
I know exactly what you're talking
about. Yeah, I can't remember the name of it. Here it is, pluralistic. Let me link real quick and I'll drop it in the boardroom. The reverse is Centaur.
Centaur.
He called AI the reverse centaur.
Yes.
And what he's saying is a centaur is something that is like a centaur in technology terms would be like a human that's driving some sort of machine. Mm. The human is in control, so it'd be more sort of like a machine with a human head.
Yeah.
And AI is like a human with a machine head.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a very good analogy. So it's more like you have flipped the script. It's like the machine is in charge and you're just sort of like walking around with this thing on your head.
Mm.
And that's what I think that kind of goes back to my discomfort with this code that I'm generating that I don't understand is I feel like I feel like I have like a machine on my head.
I feel you, brother. I feel you.
and I think so. This is a long-winded way, and if I'm nothing else, I'm long-winded. This is a long-winded way of saying I think there is a legitimate core here that is causing a discomfort, and it's something that we should not dismiss and we should take seriously. I just think that we don't exactly fully know how to explain it yet. And it will become evident over time, you know, as we go forward into whatever this thing is.
Hmm.
I think that it's just not clear yet. And this is the way of the world with technology. Technology does this to us all the time. It makes us uncomfortable, and sometimes it takes years to understand it. To understand why and to see what happened. And we now know that this rectangle in our pocket is a horrible device. It's caused so much emotional harm to people.
Mm-hmm.
And putting the internet in your pocket was a terrible idea in so many ways.
Yes, it was.
And social media is a
worst
is a,
idea is a ever.
Dumpster fire.
Yes.
Yeah. But then, you know, but it took us 10 years to understand that. And this is, it'll be the same way with this. It's going to take a while, just because you can't explain why right this second doesn't mean that it's not there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Let's thank some people, Dave, so you can get back to your busy job.
All right.
Didn't mean to bring you down, man.
I got to find my paper.
Yeah, you find your paper. Not a lot of boosts coming in during this board meeting, but that's okay. I think everyone was enthralled with the content of it. Salty Crayon, 555. That's a row of swans. He says, welcome back, Dave. Howdy, devs of Fountain. Since we never asked for video, can you please fix the flipping chapters that continue to show the same artwork across the entire music episodes? Sincerely, with a cherry on top, v4vmusic.com for a better experience. Sounds like a bug. And my experience is don't start off your bug fix request with, since we never asked for this. But that's just me. That's just me.
Helpful hint. That's a helpful hint.
There's Martin Lindiskogue with a Freedom Boost 1776. He says, Adam, you are the tour guide of the Big Apple. Dave, glad to hear you had a good time. How did the climbing competition go?
Oh, it's good. She's currently qualified for regionals.
But very nice. I joined the live now at 7:45 p.m. Central European time. By the way, I agree it's a good thing with the new podcast hosting companies entering the market. I am using Alitu, Captivate, and Podhome at the moment. I will move Tea Party Media podcast to True Fans Hosting. And that baller was Dreb Scott, 10,000 sats. Thank you very much, Dreb.
Yo, Dreb.
And with that, I hit the delimiter already. So up to you, my friend.
I have not heard. But did you receive your Christmas present?
I have not yet. Have you received your Christmas present?
I have not.
Okay. Then
You
sent me an email said, be on the lookout for this. Like, I don't want to see what it is. Don't send me. I like packages. I like surprises.
Yeah, but I can't control it. They're gonna send it an email, and I was afraid the email might get to you before. It's a combo. It's like an email and a physical product, and I was like, I don't know when they're gonna send the physical.
Oh, finally, an AI real doll. Thank you, Dave. I'm so excited.
I went with blonde. I hope that's okay.
Yeah, that's fine. Thank you.
Okay, green eyes, blonde.
Can I cut her hair however I want to?
Yes, and it grows back.
I got you one physical product, but there is a software component.
I wanted the physical thing, but they didn't sell the physical without the digital. And I was
okay.
Had to.
Got it. Thank you.
Well, if you haven't get, but if you haven't gotten the email yet, it got rejected by your spam and you'll never get it.
It's quite possibly, if it has the word unsubscribe in it, then I know where it is, but I'd have to go looking for it.
Okay. Well,
that's all right.
Ignore it. And if it gets close to Christmas, I'm going to check back in with you and see what the issue is.
All right. Well, let me know when my gift arrives for you.
Will do.
Okay.
Thank you, Sugar.
Okay, baby.
Oscar Mary, 200 smackers.
Nice.
Baller, shot caller, 20-inch blades on the Impala.
Thank you, Oscar. And friends, Oscar and friends, thank you very much.
Diagnosing currently a problem that Oscar is having with the API. He is getting rate limited, and we're trying to figure that out. And so I think it's periodic, so we'll get it. We will get it fixed.
Okay.
Look, we got Barry from Podhome. Look at Barry.
Hey, Barry.
$200.
Bam.
Baller, shot caller, 20-inch blades on the Impala.
Yeah, Barry has figured out the art of getting your product known on podcasts. He also donated to the No Agenda Show for Black Friday.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Podhome.fm. I think he has a special going on. Did he have a note?
He does. He says, hey guys.
Hey.
Here is an early Christmas present for the index from Podhome. Podhome.fm. I really appreciate what you do, and I hope you realize that you are really making a big impact in the world.
Oh, thank you, Barry. I think Barry has special prices for the season. So if you're looking for modern, up-to-date, all tags included podcasting, podhome.fm.
So my cats we got two cats, and they love it when I wad up a paper wad and throw it in the house. They'll run and chase it and then bring it back to you.
They bring it back to you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They love it.
Can they fetch your slippers?
Oh, if only. But they are now
good cats.
The door to this room I podcast in is glass.
Mm.
And every time I wad up these notes and throw them, they're both sitting there at the window staring. They're dying for me to throw these.
Throw some paper, Daddy.
Let's see. $50 from Saggio Management Group Incorporated, no note.
Oh.
And this is a subscription, $50 a month.
Wow. I'm going to big baller that.
Baller. That's nice. Shot caller, 20-inch blades on the Impala.
Thank you very much.
Let me see if I have an email that might go along with this. Just want to make sure I didn't miss a note here. Let's see. I do have a note. Just set up a $50 monthly donation to Podcast Index.
Nice. That's appreciated.
Perhaps you could mention my name, Ralph Estep Jr., and I am the content creator's accountant. I have 4 active shows, and my network is... Okay, yes, this is a note. Okay. Hey, guys, I just set up a $50 monthly donation to your podcast index. Perhaps you could mention my name, Ralph Estep Jr., and I am the content creator's accountant. I have 4 active shows, and my network site is askralph.com. I just launched a new show, The Content Creator's Accountant, where I'm working to help podcasters and other content creators with the financial side of the business. Best wishes, Ralph.
Oh, I see him right here. Welcome to Ask Ralph Media. Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Ralph looks like a fun fellow.
Does he look like a fun fella?
Yeah, he does. He's smiling. Yeah, very nice. Thanks, Ralph.
Yeah, thank you very much. Appreciate that. That is, let's see, that is it for those. But we do have some boostergrams. Get in here and find the boosts. Okay, I'll sort that. Here we go. So we got Seth. That's Seth with a 3 instead of an E.
Mm-hmm.
1183, an authoritative way to point to the actual authoritative and main feed is so needed. Yes, and so this goes back to the moveyourpodcast.com
idea. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which we will need to build.
Yes, yeah, in addition to everything else we're doing.
Yeah, we're building it all.
Mm-hmm.
33333 from a Cameron.
Wow.
This is through Fountain, and the message is just IPFS Cameron.
Ah, yes, IPFSpodcasting.net.
Yep. Thank you, Cameron. Appreciate you, brother. Neil Veglio, 2338 through True Fans. Okay. He says, great episode explaining the importance of the index, which we all know, but the reminder is always good.
Yes. Thank you for supporting it.
Mm-hmm. Bruce, the Ugly Quacking Duck, 2222 through Podcast Guru. He says, I was trying to add a card on Strike. At the same time, everything was going down. Funny how I had to create a support ticket. And they got back and said all was fixed. Laugh out loud. Thank you for the episode. 73s.
73s. Thank you very much.
Let's see. We already did that one. Is this the delimiter? I think
it's Comics or Blogger.
We got two delimiters. Yes, we got, because we didn't have a show last week. And he said,
that's
last
right.
Week.
Yes. Oh, that's a good point.
Thank you, Comics or Blogger. We got a double delimiters, two commas in a row. A comma strip blogger is what it should be called. 17015 sats through Fountain. He says, howdy, Dave and Adam. My fellow Pomeranian fan, Lady Vox from Alaska, woof, and her co-host, Dame Loca from Texas, have just dropped yesterday new episode of their podcast. Find it at website www.grumpyolddames.com or search for Grumpy Old Dames in your podcast Appy app. It's about, quote, we also grump about how our oversensitive society has turned everything, including Thanksgiving, into a culture war, end quote. Yo, CSB AI Arch Wizard.
Yeah, I'm expecting the AI Arch Wizard to contribute to our party time project.
That's why he hasn't yet, because we weren't doing AI. So now he...
He has no excuse. No excuse whatsoever. Oh, excellent.
Well, we got a double, though. There's another one. Comic Strip Blogger, 17015 through Fountain. He says, howdy, Dave and Adam. And it's the exact same
message. Exact same message. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, CSB. We got some monthlies.
Yeah. Way to go.
Joseph Maraca, $5. Kevin Bay, $5. Cameron Rose, $25. Dreb Scott, $15. Chris Bernardick, $5. Michael Kimmerer, $5.33. Randall Black, $5. Christopher Reamer, $10. Cone Glossbach, $5. James Sullivan, $10. Pod Page and Brendan over there, $25. Thank Mark you. Graham, $1. And New Media, that's Martin Lindeskog, $1.
Wonderful. Throw that at your cats. Thank you all so much. Board meeting adjourned. Are you working this weekend? Do you get to hang out? What are you doing?
We are going to the Firm Christmas party tonight.
Ah.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. This is where you get your Christmas package from the firm? You get your little Christmas...
The package.
That's a big thing in Holland. It's called the kerstpakket. Christmas package. And people will... be talking to say, hey, what did your company give you in your kerstpakket?
And is this like a bonus or something? Or?
No, it's literally like a package, and then it'll have maybe a bottle of wine and some cheese, and and sometimes like a cool gadget. So it's the kerstpakket. Everyone's talking about it, and right now,
what is the Dutch cheese like? Are the Dutch famous for a particular type of cheese?
Why, I'm glad you asked. Yes, they are. Gouda or Gouda.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. The Americanized Gouda.
Yes, and you know what they also make in Gouda is candles.
Cheese candles?
Holland is one of the largest candle producing nations, I believe.
And they make them out of Gouda.
Well, no, if you get your Gouda, the wax on the outside is, of course, from the wax people.
Then they pivoted that into a candle making operation.
I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure. Okay. I'm sure they pivoted into some kind of food that we're eating that we don't know about. We're always eating candle wax. So isn't that what Crisco was? I think Crisco was candle wax, and they turned, oh, well, we can cook with this.
You should never cook with Crisco because it is candle wax.
Crisco is good disgusting. For one thing and one thing only, and it shall not be mentioned on this board. All right, everybody. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next Friday right here for more of Podcasting 2.0.
You have been listening to Podcasting 2.0. Visit podcastindex.org for more information.
Go podcasting!
I'm a huge fan of nuts.